it's amazing. Think about a leader of a country that uses military force and debases the media in order to increase his political strength. You would say that could not happen in the United States of America. And right now, there are a lot of Republicans out there who should be standing up. If you're in a swing district right now, I suggest doing an ad straight to camera and say, this fear, this happening is unacceptable, and I will stand up against it. Because that may help you win if you're in a swing district. Buying into this will only hurt you, and you're going to lose.
Finally, we are in the waning days of the 2018 election season. You know, in Canada, they only have 3 months. 3 months where they get pummeled with ads, PSAs, speeches, all these scumbag politicians crisscrossing America. 3 months! Not us. Here's how long ours tend to run. So we are at the end of 2018 right now. The calendar turns to 2019 in 2 months, and that begins the next election season, the next presidential election season. We're 2 months into a new president, so you know what that means. Time for the, oh my, loaded. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Fire You Can't Put Out. My name is Melvin, and I want to thank you so much for being here. Episode number 270. So something hit me last weekend. I recorded last week's show on Thursday, to Halloween. I did my editing, I kicked it out to my producer, and then he put it out the following Monday, so you probably received it Sunday or Monday. But on Saturday, so I recorded on Thursday. On Saturday was the mass shooting that happened inside the synagogue in Pennsylvania, where one of these Trumpers decided that he had just had enough of these dang dumb Jews, had to go kill him, some of them, because some folks believe the way that you make the world better is by killing the people that you don't like. Of course, it doesn't make the world better. We just lost a lot of people. It's the worst Jewish massacre to ever happen on U.S. soil. Worst ever. And one of the things I was warning about in episode number 269 was all of this casual racism and casual anti-Semitism. I click off the mic. 2 days later, a synagogue gets shot up. And they asked the president about it. And they said, "Do you think, Mr. President, you should probably tone down your language?" And he said, "No! No, my God, no. As a matter of fact," he said, this is real, paraphrasing, not a direct quote, he said, "I should probably turn it up." This is a real thing. And then, of course, he began referring to himself as a nationalist. Of all the Democrats that got bombs sent to them by this crazy white guy down in Florida, the very, very first person to get a bomb was George Soros. George Soros has long been a target of the right, and with no justice. See, here's the belief, what they say is the belief. George Soros is funding the entire Democratic Party. The Democratic Party is little more than an AstroTurf organization fully funded by George Soros. Okay. So they say that they've got a problem with billionaires funding an entire Republican Party. And the irony is completely lost on them. But here's the truth about Mr. Soros. Mr. Soros is a survivor of the Nazi concentration camps. George Soros wasn't a Nazi. He's Jewish. And during the war, he hid from them. Well, he hid the fact that he was Jewish. See, he was picked up as a courier. A lot of young boys were used as couriers by the Nazi army. For whatever reason, he was able to get away with being a courier, and they never found out that he was Jewish. Of course, when he was around them, he had to make sure that nobody saw him pee, for obvious reasons. So he hid the fact that he was a Jew during the war. And on the right, They say the other thing that we need to be worried about with George Soros is the fact that, and this is real, George Soros is a Nazi. The attacks on Soros are wildly untrue. First of all, he doesn't fund the Democratic Party. He's a philanthropist who funds a lot of progressive causes. Progressive causes like helping women. Progressive causes like helping immigrants. Progressive causes like helping people vote. He funds these causes that are seen as Democratic causes because they help people. Right? He gives money to distressed groups in other countries as well. This is his sin. And for this, they say, he's funding the entire Democratic Party. And it's insane on one level. But on the other level, if you look at it for what it really is, this is just another form of casual anti-Semitism. When they're barking about George Soros, what they're really saying is he's a Jew. He's a Jew and he's destroying the world. He's a Jew. That's what it is. So when Trump recently came out with the statement that he played, that I played last week, you know what? I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to play it for you again because I want to explain a few things to you, okay? So Trump comes out as a nationalist. So I'm going to go play this clip. I'm going to break it down for you.
A globalist is a person that wants the globe to do well, frankly, not caring about our country so much. And you know what? We can't have that. You know, they have a word. It sort of became old-fashioned. It's called a nationalist. And I say, really, we're not supposed to use that word. You know what I am? I'm a nationalist, okay? I'm a nationalist. Nationalist. Nothing. Use that word. Use that word.
Globalist versus nationalist. So here's what he's doing. Globalist. There is a conspiracy on the far right. And I hear it all the time. I listen to right-wing talk shows. I listen to left-wing talk shows. On the right-wing talk shows, they'll call up and they tend to use a lot of coded language. You know, they do this for both types of talk shows, both the left and the right. They use this coded language, right? A lot of these guys, right? These guys with the last name, you know, that ends in Steen or something of that nature, you know? And they'll say, they're bankers. And these bankers are taking over the whole world. See, there's this stereotype about Jewish people, about how greedy they are and how they hoard money. And so conservatives, weirdly again, don't like this. And they say, oh my God, these dang gum Jews and the Jew bankers and they're taking over the world. And they say, but they can't say Jew banker. So they say globalist. The globalists. The one world government, these globalists are taking over. Nationalists. So nationalists are your people that have an allegiance. It sounds like to a country, but it's largely to a race. See, the white power groups, you know, the white power, white nation, we need a white. They believe that God wants this to be a white nation. They believe that the founders want this to be a white nation. Right. And this is what Hitler called himself, you know, for the Nazi nation, for the white supremacist nation in Germany, not nationalists. They refer to themselves as nationalists. And you hear this from dictators and these racists all over the world. They refer to themselves as nationalists. So Trump says, I am not a globalist. Right. Meaning, and his people understand this, I am not a Jew banker. I am not a Jew. But then he says that he's a nationalist. So he's not one of them. And as a matter of fact, he is the answer to them. And his people understand this. And that psychopath, right? I played this clip last. That psychopath, he heard the same thing. And he goes, that's it. Hias, H-I-A-S. The Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society. What it is it's a group that helps immigrants assimilate. They help them migrate and they help them assimilate into new societies. And immigrants have any number of reasons why they leave their home countries. A lot of the ones coming from South America right now, they don't feel safe. And so this guy that shot up the church, he believed that they are nothing but a bunch of Jews helping to bring in more Jews. They're going to, do you hear what's going on right now? See, ladies and gentlemen, when we sit out elections, this is the kind of stuff that we allow to happen. I don't believe that the last election was a reflection of what people really wanted. I believe that last election was merely a reflection about people's apathy. The people are just sick of it. The people just don't care. The people are turning away from it. And in the last 2 years, we have watched the president proudly parade white nationalism. Now he's proudly parading anti-Semitism. And the anti-Semitism is also with Stephen Miller, the guy who writes all the president's speeches. And then, of course, the Trump's campaign manager. And, of course, Steve Bannon, a white supremacist. They all worked at the White House. Tons of white supremacists still work at the White House. And let us not forget about Sarah Huckabee Sanders.
I don't know what's confusing about that. I know that sometimes members like Senator Schumer need a little help and guidance getting through big policy negotiations like that. But the president's laid out what he wants. And if they need help understanding it, we'd be happy to send some people over there to explain it to
them. Do you really want to be questioning Senator Schumer's knowledge of this legislation?
Look, if he's unclear about what the president has laid out, then possibly.
Schumer is also Jewish. And this is Sarah Huckabee Sanders' not-so-sly way of saying, if that dumb Jew doesn't understand, see, it's infected the entire White House. The closing arguments are being made right now ahead of the election. Some of you will get to hear this episode before the election happens. And I don't know what's going to happen. I'm not entirely convinced of a blue wave. So I'm not going to make any predictions here. Some of you aren't going to hear what I'm saying into this microphone until after the election happens. Maybe you don't listen to the show till Wednesday or Thursday. I certainly hope for the best. Certainly hope that the level of apathy that allowed us to get to this place back in 2016 does not persist this year. But I still see it. I see people. They go online and they go, I commented on this and I said that. It doesn't matter what you say online, what you say to somebody you know, the fact that you marched with a sign downtown. All of that stuff is good. Hell, especially if it makes you feel better. But what's better? What's way, way better is actually voting.
Their own personal self-interest constantly. That's all we see on display consistently among Republicans who are choosing to prop up these lies and to devalue truth and factual accuracy in the American public. And it's really disgusting. I can't believe that we're at the phase where, you know, the $12 billion bailout for agriculture because of a dumb policy decision, and all of these so-called fiscal conservatives can just get behind it because they're going to go with Trump no matter what. And we're just seeing where people really do not stand for much except the ideology of power.
Rage is an interesting thing, and the things that people decide to rage about are even more interesting to me. I hate racism. I hate anti-Semitism. I hate homophobia. I hate misogyny. The opposite of love is not hate, it's indifference. Hate is also a strong emotion, just like love is, and that is because it comes with passion, which means that I feel passionately against those things. Those are the things that I rage against. I hate children being in cages. Okay? I hate there being an accused rapist on the Supreme Court. Okay, I hate the way that we are looked at right now by the world. I hate how cold my fellow countrymen seem. Cold and indifferent towards their fellow Americans. I hate that. Those are the things I hate. How about the rest of the country? There's an article over at Rolling Stone. Headline, FCC report, America still fears cursing, nipples, and Kanye West on SNL. This is real. Quoting here, on a recent episode of Saturday Night Live proved three things about the United States right now. Americans still fear curse words, nipples, and Kanye West. More than a dozen concerned viewers contacted the FCC directly after Kanye West performed on the show to complain that he dropped the F-bomb on live network TV. And then there was Teyana Taylor, who performed We Got Love with Kanye West on the show. She wore a sheer outfit that showed her nipples, and my God, America freaked the F out. They said, hey, this is some of the letters here. Were the NBC censors asleep? Please investigate and find! ! One person wrote in to say her nipples were quite visible. Oh, and Kanye dropped the F-bomb a whole bunch of times. So here's the other thing I hate. I hate Kanye West. Kanye West doesn't serve any legitimate purpose. He's not a good rapper. He's not a good singer. He's not thoughtful. He's not anything. He's an awful human being that has too much money and too many eyes on him. Kanye West is absolutely nothing. Which means Kanye West is in love with the president. And he did that. He did that in recent weeks. Sat in the Oval Office with his MAGA hat and talked about how it made him feel like a superhero. This was a real thing. And then, of course, he got roundly and rightfully hammered by the African American community for saying, how in the F are you backing this white supremacist president? Kanye did another thing called Blexit, which is the black people exiting the Democratic Party and starting to vote for Republicans. Kanye West was going to be the one guy that made this happen. And this is the only reason Trump let him into the office. He goes, hey, look, a black guy. All these black people, they all listen to each other. I'll get the black vote. Nobody likes Kanye West. Nobody. I think when Kanye has a hit record, because there's a lot of streams, people tune in to go, oh my God, what has this dum-dum done now? Nobody really likes Kanye West. But nice try anyway, folks. And the fact that people are upset by nipples and cursing. I get the whole Kanye thing. Sorry, I just do. But the rest of that. But the kids in cages. No, 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 that's cool. The accused rapist on the Supreme Court. No, 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 that's cool. The white supremacy. No, 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 that's cool. The anti-Semitism. No, 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 that's cool. Sending 15,000 troops to the border. 15,000 troops. More troops than we have in Afghanistan to deal with the invasion, the president calls it. The invasion. That's the stuff that bothers me. But the rest of America, nipples.
How would you advise senators to proceed next week? And how do you balance the rights of a woman who's making accusations like this versus the presumption that a person is innocent until proven guilty?
Well, I think the presumption should exist. But what should happen is the woman should be given the benefit of the doubt and not be abused again by the system. My biggest regret was I didn't know how I could shut you off as you were a senator and you were attacking Nina Hill's character. Under the Senate rules, I can't gavel you down and say you can't ask that question, although I tried. And so what happened was she got victimized again during the process. Ask tough questions. Ask substantive questions. Where were you? What said? Who said what, etc.? But don't go after the character assassination.
Well, it seems like you get it now versus back in 91.
Well, I think I got it in 91. I don't think people have their own opinion.
So that was Craig Melvin sitting down with Joe Biden before the hearings on Kavanaugh, with Christine Blasey Ford and Kavanaugh. And the thing about Joe Biden is Joe Biden did not get it back then. And he looks back now and he regrets the way he handled it. There's a joke inside of the Anita Hill home, and I may have said this on the show before, but it bears repeating again, and that is, sometimes when the doorbell rings, the family jokes with one another that that's Joe Biden at the door to apologize for the way that he handled Anita Hill during the Clarence Thomas hearings back during the 90s. That's the joke that they make. So we know we handled that completely wrong. And we did it again. We did it again. We handled this one completely wrong. And despite what Christine Blasey Ford got up and said, they went ahead and put this guy through anyway. I recently had to pull my daughter out of the school she was in and put her into a different school because of a bully that she was dealing with. And this bully explicitly said to her that he looked up to Brett Kavanaugh and talked about how that bitch was lying and how much he likes Brett Kavanaugh. Now, he probably doesn't. He's probably parroting what he hears from his parents, but this is a kid. This is a teenager. And this is already the way he thinks, which means that somebody inside that home, and I don't care if his parents are listening right now, somebody inside that home has told him that it is okay. It is okay to treat women that way. You want to know why sexual violence continues to happen? You want to know why we have so much misogyny? You want to know why we brainwash women into doing and saying what men want them to do and say? Is because of the way that we raise our boys. Yes, indeed, it is also because of the way we raise our girls, but it is largely about the way that we raise our boys. So Melinda Winter-Moyer over at Slate.com wrote an article, headline, Ending Sexual Violence by Raising Better Boys. When my wife got pregnant with our children, I hoped that they would all be girls, and they were. And the reason why was because certainly back then I had this idea that boys had to be raised a certain way. Boys had to be macho. Boys had to be tough. Boys had to grit their teeth. And boys didn't cry. That's what I was told. That's the way I was treated. That's the way I was raised. That's the way I was brought up. And then when I grew up, I said, I don't want to be grr. I don't want to be macho. I don't want to fight. I don't want to punch people. You know, I don't want to call women bitches. I don't like any of that stuff. And so here I am, this soft, white male that throws his hands around a lot that everybody's pretty damn sure is gay, but I'm not, just not a macho, macho man. What my wife has since pointed out to me since then is, actually, I would probably have been the best candidate for raising a boy. Teaching a boy all those values that we do not teach boys. You know, there was an experiment done a number of years back where they have a baby and they test people's response around the baby when it's crying. Okay. So they take the same young baby, and I'm doing this from memory, and they put a blue shirt on him, right? They put a blue shirt on the baby. You don't know what the baby's gender really is, but they put the blue shirt on the baby, right? And the baby starts crying, and they go, no, let him cry it out. You know, he's strong. He'll get over it. Let him cry it out. You know, and that's the way he's handled. He's a baby, you know, days old. And they put a little pink bow on its head, you know, put a little pink shirt on it. Then the baby cries. Oh my God. We pick the baby up. We cradle. Oh my God. You pat the baby on the back. Got to make the baby feel better. Got to make the baby feel better. Babies, whether they be boys or girls, have the exact same emotional needs. When they cry, they need to be comforted. They need to be cuddled, regardless of what their gender is. But we have this idea that we raise boys one way and that we raise girls another way. And that trucks are just for boys. And that, you know, playing house is just for girls. Because when they're going to take care of the house when they grow up. And you're going to drive the damn truck. And then that's all there is to it. And these strict gender roles that we have, it's not just damaging mentally, it's also damaging emotionally. So this article by Melinda Winter-Moyer reads like this, quoting here, hearing Christine Blasey Ford's story, I thought of my 4-year-old daughter and ways I can prepare her to survive in this misogynistic world. But most pressingly, after witnessing Kavanaugh's and Trump's outbursts, I considered my 7-year-old son. What can I do to shape him into a respectful man, one who doesn't assault women, most importantly, but also one who doesn't make lewd jokes, doesn't grab butts, mock victims, or generally treat women as if they are inferior? Before the Kavanaugh saga, this was not a question most parents usually pondered. The language of sexual violence prevention largely revolves around what we can teach girls about staying safe. Some protocols to prevent sexual assault in schools and on college campuses have involved educating only women. Isn't this kind of ridiculous? Aren't the people best positioned to prevent sexual assaults the people who usually commit the assaults in the first place? And she's got a couple of pointers. Strategy one, make your boys feel as comfortable as possible experiencing and discussing their emotions. This is something that we are discouraged against in every way. And it's countercultural because American parents tend to frown upon emotion in boys. We tell our crying boys to buck up or to stop acting like a girl. I've heard this. Casting boys as stoic and physical and girls as weak and emotional sends the message that one sex has the power and competence and the other does not. Denying boys emotional freedom does do damage. Another strategy, teach your kids to set and respect emotional boundaries. Expanding on this idea, emphasize and respect the notion of privacy. If your family is generally comfortable with nudity, that's fine, but still, signify that being naked is something that people do in private. When your kid waltzes into the bathroom while you're getting into the shower, maybe say, you know, just you're in the bathroom, I'm naked, that's okay, but next time maybe could you knock? You know, don't freak out, but let them know, hey, boundaries, boundaries, boundaries. And it's not just for girls, it's for boys, it's for everybody. That kind of acknowledgement shows that you have boundaries and that you know how to assert your boundaries and that you want them to respect your boundaries. The more your son encounters and navigates boundaries, the more comfortable and acceptable he'll be down the line when he meets a young woman who asserts her boundaries. Strategy three, model respectful behavior regularly and engage with your kids about what that means. Kids tend to notice much more about what you do than what you say. According to Mark Van Ryzen, an educational psychologist at the University of Oregon, boys learn a lot from watching how dad treats mom and from how conflicts are resolved within the family. If boys are living in households where there's verbal hostility displayed towards their mothers or sisters or towards other women, they're going to learn those attitudes and values themselves. And if we do that, it will be generally easier to avoid things like this.
Look at me and tell me that it doesn't matter what happened to me.
Do you have an answer, Senator?
No, thank you. What do you think? You have a problem.
Question for the Senator.
No, I want to talk to him. Don't talk to him.
Respond.
What do you think?
Can I respond?
I understand, but tell me, I'm standing right here in front of you.
Why now? Why not wait? Why not wait? Why not wait for the investigation? There's no harm.
There's an article about voters over at 538.com, and I want to bring something to your attention. White people have not voted in the majority for a Democratic candidate since LBJ, since Lyndon Baines Johnson. And of course, when LBJ signed the Civil Rights Act, that's where he lost white people. The reason that we have ever, and I mean ever, gotten any Democrats elected since then were because of the minority votes. White women tend to vote more Republican too, so it really is a race thing. And the article reads like this. What if only men voted? Only women? How about only non-white voters? This is from 538.com. A woman-only electorate would give Democrats a huge House majority. The adjusted vote share estimates suggest that women would elect 275 Democrats and just 160 Republicans, which is 44 more than the Democrats need in the election coming up next Tuesday. Men, on the other hand, would elect a 249 to 186 Republican majority. And then it goes through minorities as far as race goes. And it found that if we only had women voters. Now, I suggested this a long time ago. I got shut down pretty good, but I don't care. I'm going to say it again because it is who I am and it is how I feel. I think that we as men should no longer be allowed to vote. I believe that only women of every race, of every nationality, only women should be able to vote. Because it seems that only women are capable, as a group, of thinking about the future, thinking about the country, thinking about people other than white men. Because of the attitude that we have had with men, largely with white men, we are in this impossible situation now, and it's not going to get better. You let only men vote. It's Republican all the way. And I understand that that would strip me, a man, of the right to vote. Fine. I would happily hand my vote to a lady any day.
You can definitely do it with an act of Congress, but now they're saying I can do it just with an executive order. Now, how ridiculous. We're the only country in the world where a person comes in, has a baby, and the baby is essentially a citizen of the United States for 85 years with all of those benefits.
Lies, 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 lies. Okay, so I can't even get through all the damn lies that he said right there, but let me try. First of all, this is not just an idea. This is not just a policy. This is not just a thing. This is the United States Constitution. This is the 14th Amendment. Remember when Republicans were pissing their pants about the fact that Obama was shredding the Constitution? Well, look here, droopy draws. This guy thinks that with just by signing a piece of paper, he can change the Constitution on his own. So, Droopy, I imagine you're going to be freaking out on him, right? And by the way, we are not the only country with birthright citizenship. There's about 30 other countries, and I don't effing understand how this stuff is not... Hey, come on, conservatives. You should be melting down over this.
To the condition of our democracy that our own president uses words infamously spoken by Joseph Stalin to describe his enemies... It bears noting that so fraught with malice was the phrase enemy of the people that even Nikita Khrushchev forbade its use. We are a mature democracy. It is past time to stop excusing or ignoring or worse, endorsing these attacks on the truth. For if we compromise the truth for the sake of our politics, we are lost.
So that's Jeff Flake speaking out against President Donald Trump. But he only felt comfortable enough to do so after he announced that he was retiring from Congress. And even though he gives the president a tongue lashing, right? He gives him these regular tongue lashings there in the Senate about how he's like Joseph Stalin and enemy of the people and how dare he do this to our democracy. He also gives him a tongue bath every time he decides to vote for every single thing that this Republican president wants. So even when they're embarrassed by his behavior, they prove again and again that they are really all the same and that he's giving them exactly what they want. I want to make you aware of a group you probably don't know anything about if you're not on any of the White Power websites, 4chan and any and all the rest. It's a group of folks that call themselves the Trumpenkriegers. The Trumpenkriegers. And they became known to a few more people this week after Trump began calling himself a white nationalist. Excuse me, a nationalist who's also a white guy. Sorry, I don't want to get any of this inaccurate. But once he started using the word nationalism, boom. You know what? They don't need it written on their foreheads in Sharpie by the president himself. Not that he'd be able to spell the word Trump and Krieger. But as soon as he said that, the Trumpenkriegers came out in force. And this, I told you, this is our guy, right? White power all the way. And you've got members of Congress. And then, of course, you've got Republican voters who are also just as much in this guy's corner, even if they aren't a waxing poetic about white power themselves. See, I heard someone say today, you know what? If somebody voted for Donald Trump back in 2016, you know, he really was the guy that said he wasn't going to hire a lobbyist. And he said that he was for gay rights. And he said that he was going to drain the swamp. And he said that he was going to cut taxes for regular working people. Hey, if people got sucked in by him, then fine, Right? Everybody gets to make a mistake, even if it's a long, you know, 2, 4, 8 year mistake. Everybody gets to make a mistake. I heard his white nationalist language during the 2016, and I knew that this was coming. But for those of you that aren't politically astute enough, okay, fine. You have to have seen it and heard it now. But then the gentleman pointed out, but if someone is still backing Donald Trump, plans to vote for him again, plans to vote for the people that are putting his agenda into legislation and passing it, okay, then that's a problem, because he's not in campaign mode anymore. You know, this isn't a camp. He's actually the president now. So if they're supporting him now with the kids in the cages and putting the accused rapist on the Supreme Court and just run right down the line, if they're supporting him now, okay, they might be a little bit racist, or they might be a lot of bit dumb. Duncan Hunter is a Republican running in California. Duncan Hunter is looking at some serious legal trouble right now. But in the county where he's running, in the district where he's running, it looks like even though he might go to prison soon, they're still going to vote for him. And I thought that this was interesting. So NBC News recently went down there and they said, you know, this guy's in a whole lot of legal trouble. Yo, if you are the Law and Order Party, as the conservatives like to call themselves, if you are the Law and Order Party, how in the hell can you vote for Duncan Hunter?
You're voting for Duncan Hunter?
Yes, I am.
Can I ask why?
You know, there are things that he may or may not have done that he's been accused of, but I think he has the best interest of our vets and our country in his heart. Being accused of something and being convicted of something is two different things.
So, if you are Christine Blasey Ford, you are a liar. And, of course, Kavanaugh is completely innocent. If you are Duncan Hunter, you may or may not have done this. Probably not, because they can't bring themselves to vote for Democrats. And the reason they can't bring themselves to vote for Democrats is because they have been told that Democrats are the Antichrist. Of course, if you remember the Book of Revelations, the Antichrist certainly sounds a lot more like Trump than it does any Democrat. But I digress. So you've probably noticed that Robert Mueller has been very, very, very quiet as of late. And that is completely intentional. That is by design. Robert Mueller has gone quiet because, and I know this is going to piss everybody off, and it should. Pissed me off for a minute too, after what James Comey did, coming out a week before the election and saying he reopened the investigation on Hillary. But Mueller said that he's going to release a gigantic amount of his findings after the election, so as not to interfere with the election at all, which is noble on the one hand, right? But on the other, yeah, I've already said what that is. And for right now, he's quiet. He's not talking about it. He's not releasing anything, just waiting until after the election. But this isn't stopping the Republicans. The Republicans are still very, 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 very hard at work trying to discredit Robert Mueller. And of course, repeatedly reminding the president, you better not talk to him.
Stay away from that, Mr. President. That interview environment is extremely dangerous. If he's a subject and not yet a target, and they want him to become a target, they're going to ask him questions, the answers to which will move him into that target category.
The president should not agree to an interview. The president should, at the most, answer written questions in a very limited area, and he should never, ever be interviewed.
The president absolutely should not sit down. He should not agree to do it.
Quoting here from an article over at CNBC.com, Mueller is investigating the Russian interference in the 2016 U.S. presidential election, as well as coordination between the Kremlin and President Donald Trump's campaign. Jack Berkman is a conservative commentator who claims to be a registered lobbyist and said in a tweet recently that we will reveal the first of the special counsel Robert Mueller's sexual assault victims on Thursday. Berkman has frequently called on Trump to fire Mueller along with Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein, who oversees the special counsel, and Attorney General Jeff Sessions, who had recused himself from interfering in the probe. He even offered a $25,000 reward to any whistleblower who could offer concrete evidence of FBI wrongdoings in the investigations. This according to the Washington Times reported in February. The special counsel's office confirmed to CNBC that it learned of a scheme from journalists who had been approached by a woman alleging that she had been offered $20,000 by Berkman to make accusations of a sexual misconduct and workplace harassment against Robert Mueller. So Berkman went and found him a woman and said, I'm going to give you $20,000 if you say that you were sexually assaulted by Robert Mueller. Now, wait a minute. A gentleman in the GOP, we don't believe victims, right? You don't believe victims. Oh, wait a minute. You would believe this particular victim, though. But wait. I got another conflict for you. Robert Mueller is a Republican. Now, you generally don't believe the victims when they're accusing a Republican, right? And Robert Mueller is a Republican. What a tangled web we weave, gentlemen. See, they fear what Mueller has. Now, he's depending on what he has, he's doing them a favor by not saying anything right now. But that doesn't mean that they're not going to try to stop him from releasing anything. Or if he releases something, having Mueller so dirtied up that nobody listens to anything that he says. This is upside down and inside out. It is not about you. It is not about me. It is not about the country. It is only about protecting the boy king.
He calls Robert Mueller a Democrat. He says the Robert Mueller investigation is run by 12 or 13 angry Democrats. That's not true. He calls it a rigged witch hunt. There have been 35 plea deals or indictments. That's just a lie, sir. And I just don't understand why he lies. Because, to your point, there are many policies that are good for many parts of the country. So why does he continue to lie?
So, I disagree with the premise of the question. I think the economy is good, and I think that he can make
that
point.
Sir, no, that's not what my question is. I've just rattled off to you a number of flat-out lies the president tells. Why does the president lie?
I don't think the president lies. I think he's saying the facts as he sees them and as he remembers them, and I think that it's a big job and a lot of information. He's trying to synthesize all that information.
We appreciate you coming on. You're not answering our question, and there's no such a thing as a fact as you see them. There's a fact... and there's a lie.
You know what I'm talking about? Yeah. Thank you, Stephanie Rule. She's not always on point, but she certainly was right there. So it's not a lie. It's just the facts as he sees them. So I want to talk about the caravan that's coming up. Well, the invasion of America. So there's an article that came out in the most recent issue of The Atlantic. And it is about Newt Gingrich and how Newt Gingrich turned politics into a blood sport. And he has. I mean, he really has. A lot of the way our politics is now is thanks in large part to him, the way he's done things over the years. It's not about working together. It's not about making the country better. It's not about love your neighbor. It's none of that. It's kill or be killed. You know, dog eat dog. If you want a friend in Washington, then you need to get a dog, right? It's that kind of thing. All against all, right? You're in your tribe, you know, but if your tribe starts turning, then it's all against all. I mean, it's pretty gross. And he was asked, what should this election be about? And he said, this election should be about Kavanaugh and the caravan. The caravan. Ladies and gentlemen, let's talk about the caravan for a minute.
You're talking about 10,000, maybe 15,000 active duty U.S. military to the border, more than we have fighting the Taliban in Afghanistan, more than we have fighting ISIS in Syria. Right. You're really going
to
do that?
It's very important. We have to have a wall of people, very highly trained people, terrific, dedicated patriots. That's what they are. You have caravans coming up that look a lot larger than it's reported, actually. I mean, I'm pretty good at estimating crowd size, and I will tell you, they look a lot bigger than people would think.
Yeah, so let's listen to that guy when it comes to crowd size. So here's what we're looking at. There's about 1,500 people remaining in the caravan. And they're coming from these South American countries where violence, I mean, they've got an ineffective government, gangs and drugs rule everything. They're seeing their families murdered in their homes. And so they're leaving to come north to America seeking asylum. It's as simple as that. There's about 1,500 of them left. Some of them will not make the trip. Some of them will turn back around. Some of them will be murdered. Some of them will be raped. Some of them will just break off. By the time they get to the border, there's not going to be very many of them left. So there's 1,500 of them. The president is talking about sending 15,000 troops to the border right now. Right, so that's 10 troops for every man, woman, and child that is in that caravan. These are men, women, and children, and they are escaping violence. And so the Trump administration decided to do another thing. They said that there are Middle Easterners hiding amongst them too. Super duper racist stuff. Okay, so this is 10 troops for every man, woman, and child. These 10 troops cover that kid. These 10 troops cover that kid. The military recognized this for exactly what it is. They said, this looks awful political. And what's going to happen? These families are going to get to the border. They're going to surrender themselves. That's what happened with the last caravan. They're going to surrender themselves, seeking asylum. And you're going to what, sir? Shoot them? About the caravan. Oh, and here's the other thing. They're pretty damn far away right now. Based on the speed that they're moving and based on where the caravan is now, if they stay on their current trajectory, they will get here to America. And by the way, he wants these troops down there now. They will get to America probably by New Year's Day. That's right. It's still 2 months away. But see, they can't run on their tax plan because it's very unpopular. They can't run on the good things that they're doing because they're talking about cutting Social Security. They're talking about cutting Medicaid. They're talking about taking away protection for your pre-existing condition. But they can't talk about that stuff. They got to make you afraid of the brown people that are coming from the South.
It did not start with Donald Trump. He is a symptom, not the cause. He's just capitalizing on resentments that politicians have been fanning for years. A fear and anger that's rooted in our past, but it's also born out of the enormous upheavals that have taken place in your brief lifetimes. Sometimes the backlash comes from people who are genuinely, if wrongly, fearful of change. More often, it's manufactured by the powerful and the privileged who want to keep us divided and keep us angry and keep us cynical because that helps them maintain the status quo and keep their power and keep their privilege. The threat to our democracy doesn't just come from Donald Trump or the current batch of Republicans in Congress or the Koch brothers and their lobbyists or too much compromise from Democrats or Russian hacking. The biggest threat to our democracy is indifference. The biggest threat to our democracy is cynicism.
So the thing that I need people to understand, especially when it comes to these caravans, is a lot of what is happening in these South American countries that has led to this violence, that has led to these ineffective governments, that has led to drug gangs taking over, that has turned these countries into a libertarian paradise. Yes, libertarians, I just said that, is American policy in the South, and that's the story that's not being told right now.
If we really want to unpack this, the reason that many folks in Honduras and El Salvador are fleeing the gang violence in Central America is because of American policy that literally created the problem in the first place. And we are basically trying to abdicate our own responsibility in that region in a fiercely gross way. And right now, the ACLU, in fact, has a court case right now with the Trump administration because of incidences of where minors have been demonstrated that they've been raped, are being forced not to have an abortion, even though they're seeking it. So this is really on the feet of the Trump administration, where they're speaking on both sides of his mouth, where he's basically trying to state claims that are not true and continuing to peddle these dog whistle politics. And unfortunately, Ali and Stephanie, if you were to ask me why, is because he has been able to demonstrate that the Republicans in the midterm election are really in big trouble. And the only thing that seems to be holding his base together is when he starts peddling these lies.
And right on cue, on Laura Ingraham's show, Ann Coulter was on recently and suggested, and this is true, that we should invade Mexico. Yes, Donald Trump is the is the commander-in-chief, and we should invade Mexico because how dare they send them to us? And I understand that Ann Coulter is not a policymaker. She's not even a serious person. She's just a bomb thrower, and it makes her a lot of money, just the same as Trump. She's a complete con. But this type of stuff works, and it works for their base. This super-duper racist, we should invade Mexico, right? And we should shoot the families that are coming over the border. This kind of stuff works with the Republican base. It's gross, and it shouldn't, especially since the Republican base is full of Christians, and I don't understand why it works.
The government puts every obstacle that you can imagine in front of these individual asylum seekers so that they will give up. They want them to take a deport. They want them to wear down so much emotionally so that they'll just say, yeah, firmo lo que ustedes quieren, nomás dame mi hijo. So they just want them to sign so they can get their kid. And they tell them that. They tell them, if you give up your asylum claim, we'll reunify you with your child. And that's extortion.
And that's gross. But apparently, that's your choice during this year's election. Right? You're going to pick a Democrat. You're going to pick the people that think it's okay to have concentration camps for children. That's your choice. And of course, at his rallies, the thing that he's saying is that he wants to bring back this child policy. He wants to expand it. He wants to lock up more children. Like, this is one of his greatest hits now. But then, of course, when he gets in front of the media.
The children can be taken care of quickly, beautifully, and immediately. The Democrats forced that law upon our nation. I hate it. I hate to see separation of parents and children. The Democrats can come to us as they actually are, in all fairness, we are talking to them, and they can change the whole border security.
But there's no law that says that families have to be separated at the border.
The Democrats gave us the laws. Now, I want the laws to be beautiful, humane, but strong. I don't want bad people coming in. I don't want drugs coming in. And we can solve that problem in one meeting. Tell the Democrats, your friends, to call me. Okay.
So there's a thing that psychologists refer to as stranger anxiety. And we all have it as babies. It's one of the things that sort of helps with adaption and survival. You know, where we recognize our parents' face, you know, because we see them the most, our mother and our father. And then anybody that does not look like our mother and father, because our mother and father look like us. Anyone that does not look like our mother and father, then we tend to turn away from. We tend to see as the other. So all of us have this stranger anxiety. And as we get older, it tends to get to be a little bit, you know, less and less. And to some degree, we always have this stranger anxiety. But for people that are afraid of everybody that does not look like them, i.e. white, it really just gets exacerbated for them. And politicians and con men, you know, like Kirstjen Nielsen, like Donald Trump, like Laura Ingraham, are able to very easily play on this for them. And this is how they maintain control of this particular group.
There has been much outcry, consternation, and frankly, misinformation from many in the press, in Congress, and advocacy groups over the last few weeks that we at DHS are intentionally doing things that are unhumanitarian, that are cruel, immoral, and disgraceful. We aren't doing none of those things. We are enforcing the laws passed by Congress. It is important to note that these minors are very well taken care of. Don't believe the press. They are very well taken care of.
So at the rallies and amongst themselves, they're proud of this. They're happy about this. They're cheering this on. This is a good thing for them. But then when they get out in public, then they do things like that. The children are being treated great. That's not really what's happening. So that's their closing argument to their base. More of that with the children. So what is our closing argument as Democrats?
Change is going to come. Hope will start happening again. And with each step that we take in the direction of fairness and justice and equality and opportunity, hope has a funny way of spreading. Hope
is infectious. Folk, hope gets a momentum. Kindness gets a momentum. Honesty gets a momentum. Caring for each other gets a momentum. That's what your vote can do. Let's get to work, Michigan.
President Obama was frequently criticized for not getting out there and doing enough for Democrats. But this year, he has gone state to state to state to state. I'm taping today on Friday, the Friday before the election, and he was in Florida earlier today. He's probably in Georgia right now. He's out there on the campaign trail, showing us once again what a functioning adult looks like.
Democrats made that happen. Not a single Republican, not one, joined us. Not one. Repeat that. Not one. Since that time, they have spent the last 8 years obsessed with trying to undermine, sabotage, repeal that law that makes sure you're not discriminated against because of pre-existing conditions. Now that it's election season, these same Republicans are running millions of dollars worth of ads around the country saying we're going to protect pre-existing conditions. That is some kind of goal. That is some kind of chutzpah. But let's also call it what it is. It is a lie.
And pointing out that all of a sudden they are coming to the rescue when it comes to pre-existing conditions. When, by the way, they have never, ever, ever, ever done that before.
I've got to believe that there's certain things that transcend party. And that whatever your political background, I'm hoping you think it's wrong to hear people spend years, months, vilifying people, questioning their patriotism, calling them enemies of the people. And then suddenly, you're concerned about civility. Please. And by the way, we don't need more mealy-mouthed elected officials who claim they're disappointed by this bad behavior, but then don't do anything about it. And just go along with it. We need leaders who will actually stand up for what's right, regardless of party. Leaders who will fight for you and what's best in the American spirit. Patriots who will stand up for anyone whose fundamental rights are at stake, whether it's your health care or your kids getting bullied in school because their last name is different, or a neighbor who's being harassed because of who they love. That's what Americans do. That's who we are. That's what America is at its best. And that's what these candidates believe.
Ladies and gentlemen, you have your pretty clear choice. You can choose fear or you can choose hope and change, because it looks like it's back again. I don't think I could have closed it out any better than former President Obama. I'm going to let you go right now. Go do your voting if you've not done so already. And make sure not to vote any later than Tuesday, despite the fact that the Republicans are telling you to go ahead and vote on Wednesday or Thursday or Friday or never ever again if you are a minority. Thank you for being here on the Fire You Can't Put Out. Our official home, TFYCPO.podbean.com. Like us at Facebook, Facebook.com/TFYCPO. You can listen on the go. Just download the Podbean app at the iTunes Store or Google Play Store for Android users. Individual episodes are available for download at the iTunes Store or on Podbean. Just search for the Fire You Can't Put Out. There you can also subscribe so you never miss an episode. Questions, comments, hate mail, just a general statement or inquiry, you can email us at TFYCPO@gmail.com. We work hard to not only inform and entertain, but also to keep an open dialogue with our growing listener base. So feel free to reach out to us and, as always, thank you for listening. We are the Fire You Can't Put Out, and we will prevail. Rejecting austerity and favor prosperity. Special thanks to Kevin for producing, and I want to dedicate today's show to Shelby. Godspeed, Shelby. Thank you for listening. This is Melvin signing off. Now that I've woken you up, good morning.